This month, Mercer Island residents were warned to stop drinking the water because of E. coli contamination. It came as kind of a shock because we sort of take it for granted that we won't get sick from our tap water. But the process of cleaning water is actually a marvel of modern technology. In fact, Stephen Johnson calls it one of the six innovations that made the modern world. Stephen Johnson is the author of How We Got to Now. He told Marcy Silman that 150 years ago, feces in drinking water was pretty common, particularly in Chicago.
You had no real sewer system at all, and there was no logical drainage for this stuff. And really, the sanitation department was a bunch of just pigs, kind of scavengers that were out in the street recycling.
Real pigs.
Yeah, actual pigs. And it was both a kind of appalling place to live, but also, you know, unhealthy. So you had these diseases that we now understand were caused by waterborne contamination of drinking water supplies by bacteria in the water. You had these cholera outbreaks that would kill thousands of people.
People even 150 years ago didn't really understand how you got sick, though.
Right. And this was the big thing that it happened. And in fact, I wrote a whole other book about this topic. I've spent a ridiculous amount of time in my life writing about sewage and waste. You know, at the time, people just thought that the diseases that were becoming epidemic in these big cities were caused by contaminated air. This was one of the great kind of medical mistakes of the 18th and 19th centuries, and it was known as the miasma theory. And it was, in a way, it was a logical mistake to make because the smells in these cities was just appalling. I mean, you can imagine, not to mention the human waste, but just the animal waste that, you know, I mean, just the horses and the cattle and everything else that was going around, not to mention the pigs. And so the cities just smelled terrible. And so people assumed intuitively that there was something that they were breathing in that was causing them to get sick. We now understand that, you know, in fact, almost all these diseases were not caused by inhaling something, but rather from ingesting something in the water supply.
People were afraid of washing. That was a big fear that you write about. Like, it was a big deal that Elizabeth I bathed, what was it, monthly or something?
Yeah.
So when did they figure out that it was maybe something that you could wash off your skin and that was a good thing?
Yeah, it was a kind of a gradual process. But yeah, this is one of the things that I love about this. As recent as the middle of the 19th century, the consensus was that submerging the body in water was a very unhealthy thing to do, and that it was, if you're trying to protect yourself from these largely kind of airborne diseases, that accumulating a lot of dirt in your pores was like a defense system, basically, so that you could keep those noxious fumes from getting into your body. So people were like, oh my gosh, you know, you took a bath, I hope you'll be all right, you know, you're defenseless all of a sudden against these invaders. Just the idea of bathing is good for you, in a sense, had to be invented. I mean, it had to be created and promoted, and it came out of public health advocates and, you know, self-help books and things like that.
As our listeners who are on Mercer Island have struggled over the past weeks with contamination alerts about E. coli, which could lead to very deadly diseases, they're worried. They're boiling water. This is something that in most of the United States, certainly in the urban, relatively affluent United States, we don't think about very often. Recently, Toledo had a water alert in the summer as well, where, you know, this is shocking to us, but it is not much more than a century that we actually even treated water. Tell me the story of chlorinated water.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite stories. Leal was this doctor who'd gotten involved in kind of managing the water supply for Jersey City and the kind of environs there. And he had become convinced that very small doses of chlorine in drinking water would effectively purify the water and make it much safer to drink.
It wasn't even called chlorine, though, right?
Yeah, it was calcium hypochlorite or whatever it was. Yeah. And he basically, this was a hard sell to make because chlorine is a poison. Technically, if you drink a couple glasses of this, you're not going to have a good day, right? And so, he knew that this was the healthy thing to do, and so he, more or less without permission, and certainly not telling the general public, he engineered this chlorine delivery system. into the water supply of New Jersey, and it was the first large scale chlorination of a large city's drinking water, and it was a tremendous success. It did in fact over time the adoption of chlorination reduced infant and child mortality by more than 50%.
But he was put on trial.
But he got into trouble. Yeah, so it took a while, and there's this great kind of transcript that we have in the book where the judge is like, you know, would you drink this water yourself? And he's like, yes, I would. I would, you know, it is the safest water in the world. And I give it to my family every day. And he was right. And it turned out to be, a really important breakthrough.
But unfortunately, chlorine doesn't kill everything that comes through your water system, because chlorinated water is pretty much the norm at this point in the United States, at least, right?
Yeah, but you know, as we said, we've reached a point where it is, you know, almost a national news story when you do have a situation where people are encouraged to boil their water, whereas just 100 years ago that would have been an everyday occurrence.
Stephen Johnson's book is called How We Got to Now, Six Innovations That Make the Modern World. You just said, Stephen, that when an urban water supply system has a problem like Mercer Islands or Toledo of this year, it is national news. It really is national news. Does that mean that the way we've done things has reached an end and it's time for a seventh innovation, or at least some kind of rethinking of how we deliver water safely?
Well, what's starting to happen, I think the really interesting part of this, and actually, you know, local hero, the Gates Foundation is part of this story, is thinking about clean drinking water and sanitation removal in the developing world. Because what you have in those situations, there are many places that are a lot like Chicago or London in 1850, where the big infrastructure hasn't been built yet. And yet people are building these kind of improvised communities, favelas, shantytowns, whatever you want to call them. And what's interesting now is that they don't necessarily have to use those big 19th century engineering solutions that were the appropriate solution, probably the best solution given the technology of the 19th century. And what they can do actually, and there's a lot of interesting work. I mean, Gates funded this Reinventing the Toilet project, which was brilliant, is basically you can build these standalone toilets that can do all the work of kind of processing the waste and even convert it into some kind of usable energy using solar power, using microchips, all the technology that we have. So it may be a situation where the developing world can kind of bypass the big infrastructure that we depend on in a city like Seattle.
Do you think at some point that new technology that people are working on because of all the various challenges in developing countries will circle back around because of things like lack of resources or, you know, finite supplies of things like water?
It could, and it could eventually just be a more efficient way to do it. You might see it on a building by building level that instead of a kind of a standalone toilet, you would have a building that is completely internally sufficient. There are buildings like that. There's one in San Francisco, actually, that I've seen. And that's a pretty interesting model where you're kind of, in a sense, it's the off-the-grid version of waste removal. You're going to have buildings that are off the grid because of solar power. You'll also have that with sanitation.
Well, things like composting toilets as well, gray water recycling. Yeah. Before I turned on the microphone, you mentioned that you lived for quite some time in Northern California. Extreme drought is the order of the day in the state of California. So when those kinds of needs press on, the innovations that are 150 years old are not so innovative.
Yeah, the flushing toilet, which really, you know, it's been around for 300 years, really, and popularized for 150 years. It's ripe for reinvention right now.
So just a last question. I wonder at somebody like you who spends your life sort of being amazed by by great technological innovation, when you turn your tap on in your sinks or your shower or when you flush your toilet, are you conscious all the time of all that went into it?
Not enough. And you don't want to be that, you know, kind of boring guy at the cocktail party that just says, look how amazing this glass of ice water is, you know. But I am often that guy.
Thank you for coming by our studios.
Always a pleasure.
Stephen Johnson is the author of How We Got to Now, Six Innovations That Made the Modern World. Those stories are currently featured in a PBS series of the same name. It starts tomorrow night on KCTS 9. He spoke to KUOW's Marcy Silman.